Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10 times points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Pushkin. Like her moniker suggests, Leticia Tamco, who records under the name Vagabond, is trying to find a musical place to call her own. When Vagabond was 13, she and her family moved from Cameroon in West Africa to Harlem. She learned English in part by watching reruns of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and identified with the outsider sentiment heard in the emo and pop punk on the radio and TV in the early 2000s. Like many children of immigrants, Vagabond was encouraged by her parents to become something practical, like an engineer. But by 17, she was writing songs and teaching herself to play guitar, and would sneak out at night to play shows at DIY punk spaces in Brooklyn. And only a few years later, was recording and putting out songs. She's been completely immersed in music ever since. Her newest release, the self-titled Vagabond, has been praised by critics at The New Yorker and Pitchfork. She's also toured with Courtney Barnett, Angel Olsen, and Brittany Howard. I did this interview recently in L.A. with my right-hand producer, Leah Rose, who's been working on Broken Records since the beginning of the year. She's a DJ and music journalist who spent almost a decade as an editor at XXL. When Leah and I sat down with Vagabond in L.A., she was in the throes of writing songs for her third album and talked to us about some of the writer's block she was experiencing. Plus, she talked about her early experiences with music in Cameroon and why she sometimes wants to give it all up to write code instead.
This is Broken Record, liner notes for the digital age. I'm Justin Richmond.
Just a quick note here. You can listen to all of the music mentioned in this episode on our playlist, which you can find a link to in the show notes. For licensing reasons, each time a song is referenced in this episode, you'll hear this sound effect. All right, enjoy the episode.
Here's Leah Rose and myself in conversation with Vagabond.
What type of music do you remember playing in your house when you were growing up?
We played a lot of Michael Jackson. My parents were obsessed with Michael Jackson. And so was everyone, you know, where we lived, which was in Yaoundé at the time. Like, everyone all over the world was obsessed with Michael Jackson. So we listened to a lot of him. And I would say that that's the most, like, contemporary, like, Western music that we listened to. We did listen to a lot of more, like, traditional West African music. Manu Dibango was a huge one. Right. Like, he's so beloved in our like, all over, but really, like, he's a star in our country. We listened to a lot of that. But most of the music that I listened to was, like, gospel music. My grandmother's a choir director. So a lot of my relationship to music was, like, at church. Mm. And So we'd listen to a lot of that and a lot of like passed down, like traditional folk stuff that my grandmother would sing around.
And then what was the first time that you really remember connecting to music?
I don't really know how to tell kids' ages, so I don't even know how old I was. But there's this like photo of me that exists at my parents' house that's me in the middle of like a group of maybe like 15 adult women that were all my mom's friends, and they would get together every Sunday. They would wear the same like traditional like African dresses, and they would just sing and play music, and I would get in this circle. So this photo is me getting in the circle and just like taking my go at it. I mean, the photo helped me remember. I don't actually like remember, but I was so young that I think that's the first time that I really had a connection with music.
Was it a church thing, or what was the group about?
It was like, you know, in French we call it like a reunion. But I don't really know. It was almost like the only thing I could equate it to is like sorority, but they were all like women with kids, you know? So it was more of like a community thing. And maybe they all went to church. I have no idea.
And did all the kids come together too that day?
No. It was only the
kids
parents
at home.
Yeah, kids at home. But since my mom was hosting, I was like able to like peek into their world.
That's and rad. You were singing and dancing in the middle of the circle.
Which is wild.
So how do you think about that now, seeing that photo? Are you like, I'm destined to be performing?
Yeah. I mean, my mom brought it up to me and was like, you know, because she, like everyone was a skeptic, including myself. What that's not a thing.
Being a musician?
Yeah. Like, what does that mean? Even though when I think about it, that's what they were doing. They just weren't calling it that. Like, there was harmonies going on. There were like drums going on, but they never called it playing music. They never called it like, we are musicians. They were just like doing, you know, like harmonizing is not something that everybody's doing in their household, you know, but no one really saw it as that. So I think my mom kind of connected the dots in the last like year. Like, I think this has been something you've been interested in a long time.
Is anybody else in your family musical at all?
Not that I know of, but they must be. I don't know.
Was your dad singing and stuff around the house also?
No, but my dad has bragged about like singing on some jazz albums that coincidentally no one knows the name to. So I don't know.
It's some underground stuff you don't know about.
Yeah, I don't know if it actually happened or if he was like, I used to dabble. I don't know. But my dad was a dancer when he was younger. But they don't really like, they rarely talk about that. You know, they rarely bring that up as like anything artistic. So to me, I have to kind of dig really hard in my memory to see the threads of music, because it's not a thing that they ever really took on as an identity.
Yes.
Yeah.
Are they musical people now or not so much?
No, they like music, but not really. Like, my mom thinks I make country music, so that's kind of like that's where we're at. Like, she's,
why country?
Because I play guitar.
Okay,
that's it. That's just, she's like, guitar, country, okay. So, you know, and that's kind of cool for me that they have no idea, and they don't, you know, they don't like go to shows on their own or buy albums or anything.
How did it become the thing for you then?
I mean, I've always been pretty obsessed with it. I used to be like 11, 12 years old. I used to be online, like looking up like studios and calling people. Like, and my mom was like, you need to stop calling strangers. But I would like call studios. I would call whoever's phone number I can find that was like attached to a music thing and be like, I want to play music. How do I submit a demo? Like, just being weird. So I've just kind of been like always interested, but no one around me had access or like the knowledge to guide me in any direction or to like even know what to tell me, you know?
Did you ever meet like a musical mentor at any point, or someone who you knew was a musician and just sort of like just got as much knowledge as you could out of that person?
No. I literally did not have anyone that I can talk to about this stuff until I started doing it. Like, there was no one around me. You know, I'm a kid, so, like, everywhere I'm around is everywhere my parents want me to be around. And so I wasn't really around anyone who played music or who listened to music in a way. Just, this was, like, so not a part of my life.
What was your exposure to live music when you were a kid?
I mean, apart from church, there was nothing. It was church and that was it. I used to love going to church. When we moved to the U.S., like, my mom started taking us to a church in Harlem called Abyssinian Church. And that is my favorite place to see a show to this day. Like, that choir made me feel like music is the single greatest thing in the world. And I would go to church, like religiously, no pun intended, to see that choir and to see them. And that church is so important in my life. Like, that's where I, like, found my scholarship to go to engineering school. That's where, like, that church was kind of like, I was a very much like a viewer of the church. Like, I wasn't, like, a part of it in any way. I just, like, went and I sat in the back and I just, like, listened. And so that is my relationship to live music. And until I hadn't seen a live show other than going to church and seeing choirs until I played a live show. So.
And then when you moved to the U.S. and you went to that church, how is the service different than the services you were used to?
It wasn't that different, actually. You know, it was Abyssinian's a Baptist church. So it's, you know, mostly Black people, and it's like the music is so, like, alive, and it's so rich, and it's so, I went to Catholic school for high school, so, like, I know what Mass is like, and I know what, like, a Baptist church is like, and I know what a church in Cameroon is like. And I would say that the church I went to in Cameroon is more similar to a Baptist church than it is to a Catholic church. You know, you get up, you, like, are interacting, you're, like, letting it take you.
Well, I was curious because I was wondering if, you know, because you got a guitar, you started getting interested in music, playing music, and you got a guitar. Well, I guess not until 17, but were you writing songs in French early on? Or
I was writing already in English because I was listening to music in English. So I was listening to, like, whatever was on the radio at that time. Mm-hmm. When I first started kind of, like, wanting to write music, it was like pop punk on the radio and, like, mm-hmm. like what, alternative
like
rock.
like Avril Lavigne.
Not even Avril Lavigne, Blink 182, but even like less of the stuff that has even held up, no shade to these bands, but like May Day Parade.
Wow.
Do you know that band?
I remember them being on, like,
May Day Parade.
Warped Tour, like, all the
yes,
time.
Yes.
Oh, that sounds, like, very Warped
so
Tour.
So, like, Warped Tour kind of bands.
Yes.
I was obsessed, and I was, like, so, I was, like, really into All Time Low and, like, Forever the Sickest Kids.
Whoa, like, these are deep. I don't know. Like, yo, I had a phase, but these are
like deep cuts.
I was very into those bands.
Do you remember, can you put yourself back into that mindset? What was it about that particular kind of music that you loved?
It was the screaming. Like, it was like, you know, you're like a teenager and you're angry. And no one had told me about, like, Rage Against the Machine. No one told me that there was, like, cool shit out there.
So I was like, good aggressive music.
Exactly.
And you needed a mentor.
Yeah, I know. No one told me this stuff was happening. So I was listening to the stuff that was closest to that, but on the radio, because that's what I had access to. Like, when you don't know anyone who's going to tell you about the record store or, like, or Rage or System of a Down or whatever, like, before anyone could tell me about that, like, there was All Time Low on the radio. There was Avril Lavigne on the radio. There's Fifi Dobson, who kind of changed my life.
Fifi Dobson?
Who's that?
Yeah, who was, like, she was, like, the Black woman who was on MTV, like, like, playing guitar and, like, singing that kind of music. And I was really not seeing any Black girls or any Black women doing that kind of music, like, on TRL or on MTV. And she was that. And so, like, that's kind of what I that was like the first time that I was like, oh my God, music is so cool. I want to play guitar.
So did you start dressing differently at that point?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely had like the swoop over bangs and like the dark eye makeup.
That's
like,
Avril Lavigne.
Yeah. Like, you know, I did that for sure. It's fine. We survived.
Yeah. I had a phase, man. My mom was concerned. She's like, are you gothic? Are you going to kill yourself? I was like, I think
gothic.
I'm cool.
That's so funny. Yeah.
When was the first time you actually went to a live show?
The first time I went to a live show, I guess technically my first one was the first show that I played, which was in 2014 at the Silent Barn in Brooklyn, New York.
Right.
I knew that the Silent Barn was a place that had like community built in, and that was a place that I can start learning how to play. And so I was like looking at their calendar and I was like, okay, like I wonder if I can hit up the bands instead of hitting up Silent Barn, because they don't know who I am. Like I'm not like anything or anyone, so I'm gonna hit up the bands and send them my song. So that's what I did. I hit up the band out of Massachusetts and I said, hey, I just put out this song, can I open the show? And they were like, yeah, whatever.
And had you been to the venue before?
No.
Did you? How terrifying.
I'm scared just hearing that story.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm more afraid now of things than I was back then. I was really? Just like, what do I you know, I had written maybe like a handful of songs by then, and I knew that I was practicing them, so I was just going to do what I did to practice. I don't know. I just did it.
Did it feel different? Because, I mean, I imagine at home you weren't practicing with like a microphone, right?
No.
Like in a PA and all that stuff. So that must have felt really different when you get up on stage.
Yeah. I mean, it was very different. It was very jarring.
Yeah.
But I mostly wanted to be good enough that the other musicians thought that I was good enough. Like,
you wanted to impress them.
Yeah, yeah. That's like kind of what the objective was. Like, I wasn't even thinking that other people would be listening. I'm just like, but if the other people think that I am doing something, then like maybe I'm doing something.
Like maybe you'll fit in, or you're one of them.
Yeah, or I'm on the right path, mm-hmm. or like this makes sense that I'm here. Like maybe if no one could tell that I've never done this before, I think I'll be okay, you know?
Did you feel powerful?
I did. Yeah, it's weird. It was a weird show, but one thing I have never been was afraid. and that includes being afraid of embarrassing myself. Like that includes being afraid of like being bad, or because at that point I had given up a lot to even be there. So I was like, I wanted to impress these people, but I also didn't care because I had a way different life than everybody else. So I was just very like, I need some validation that like I could do this, but I also, I'm going to do it regardless, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So had you given up maybe a path in life that you thought you were going to take at that point? You had already made up your mind that this is what I'm going
to
do?
Yeah, I had made up my mind to myself. I hadn't told my parents that. I hadn't told anybody else in my life that. Because I understood that it would sound crazy. Like, you know, I'm an engineering student. That is clearly a path that is pretty much guaranteed. Like, you know, they say that you don't know if you get out of school and you have a job, but like in technology and like engineering, you have a job. Like you can go get a job that pays you like $70,000 when you're 22 and you could be all right.
Yeah.
You
know? It's very stable.
It's very stable. And
it sounds really good.
Yes.
It's very impressive.
Yeah. And your parents want to tell everybody that that's what you're doing.
Yeah. Especially, you know, parents who came here and worked to give you an education.
Exactly.
Right. I mean.
Exactly. Yeah. So I was like, already knew that I would be doing that, but I was like, let me make sure I have something to show before I blow my whole life up.
And then who were you collaborating with back then? Was there anyone who you would sort of like play stuff for, get feedback from?
Yeah, I had very early on before Infinite Worlds, I had a friend who was also an engineering student, and he had like an emo band, and he was the only one that was around me that like played guitar and like played loudly and like screamed and stuff. And so I would play him early on my songs. And in the very, very early iterations, like that first show, he played it with me. And I wouldn't really get feedback. I wasn't really interested in, because I didn't really even know. I've been really adamant about people shaping me in like in too early of a stage. There were so many things that I knew that I would become better at, that like only I have insight on the vision. Like, wow. So there was like a lot, if the notes were based on like my current self, I knew that I was so new to it that there was bound to be progress. So
what songs were you playing then?
I was playing just a lot of songs that ended up on my first album.
Okay.
A lot of the songs from Infinite Worlds are from like 2014.
Wow.
They're some of them are the first songs that I've written. Songs like Cold Apartment, Sharks, aka the Embers, and then there are a few that were on the EP before Infinite right. Worlds that I was playing too.
Would you mind playing Sharks? Would you mind playing the Embers?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
I was waiting for that next line.
I know.
Cut it right.
Sorry. I haven't practiced that in a long time.
It sounds so good.
But that's
gorgeous.
That's that.
We'll be back with our conversation with Vagabond after a quick break.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G-connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at tmobile.com/now. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How did the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest. Sue Brewer and the birth of outlaw country music. Discover the true, untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer helped shape the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed The Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts, would spur each other on to tap into something bigger, realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Bacharach as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash, alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest. Sue Brewer and the birth of outlaw country music. Listen now at audible.com/theboar'snest.
We're back with more from Vagabond. It's just incredible that so early on you had a vision.
Yeah.
And that you were so confident.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like you're still sort of have that same philosophy
mm-hmm.
with the new album. You did pretty much everything completely on your own,
mm-hmm.
played almost every single instrument, produced
mm-hmm.
every song.
Mm-hmm.
Now it seems like that was very intentional.
Yeah. I would say everything that I do is intentional,
mm-hmm.
maybe even sometimes to a fault. Like, I just want to be really good and I want to be respected. And And I have this like urge to earn it. You know what I mean? Mm. Like I don't want to just like put my name on something. I want to like have it be like real. I want to know that I could produce a record. But at the end of the day, like, I'm really glad that I did that. I'm really glad that I know how to do that. And that whatever this album means now or later, like, I know that it's important for me. Like my trajectory as a musician.
Would you ever consider working with a producer, or do you like being your own producer and kind of the pressure that comes with that also?
I mean, I like it, but I don't know if I would do this shit again. Like I think that, you know, this last self-titled record is my second album, and it's not just like my second album on a label. It's not just like my second album as Vagabond. It's my second album, period. Like, it's the second body of work I've made. And so it's still really early on for me, and I still wanted to be like to know what I was doing, even if I have access to hire anybody. Like, I want to have that knowledge, and then I can kind of like open it up a little bit. So now I feel like I'm in a stage where I can like go as far as like co-producing.
How do you think about the second one? I mean, it's like your newest record, but it's been a couple of years, and you're writing the new one now. So it kind of is behind you in a way.
Yeah, it's a little bit
behind. People are discovering it still,
right?
You know? Like, but
yeah, I think I'm like, I honestly, I go in and out. If I'm like going to be all the way honest, sometimes I'm like, I used to, when it first came out, I was like, I killed that shit. That was so good. And now I'm kind of like, did I? Like, I don't know.
It's really good.
Thank you.
It is really good.
I think it's weird. I think I'm still kind of coming to terms with doing something that was that different from what I was doing before. And I'm not sure if it's, I think it's part of a larger story, and it's kind of like dot, dot, dot. Yeah. Like, it's part of a larger thing, which will be my career. But like on its own, so I'm pretty confused about it, you know?
Do you feel like you want to go back to the kind of more the sounds of the first one, or continue sort of, is there going to be like a, when the third one comes, it will be like, wow, there is this sort of
this
progression
yeah.
happening.
Honestly, I feel like the third one is where I need to like pick a lane, essentially, which may not be true, but I'm just gonna be real. Like, this is what's going on in my head about like, okay, I made an indie rock record, and then I made a record that's not that, and now I don't really know. I'm now trying not to think about what kind of a record I'm making. I just want to write songs, and I just want to like put those songs on an album. So I'm just kind of like, I'm a little confused.
Do you think that's more for you so you can classify yourself?
No, it's fully because like outside sources are in my head.
Are like, people like, yeah. Your
not like
label?
Or no. When people write about your music,
yeah,
it's like
I don't really read my press unless it's like The New Yorker. Thank you very much. but like I
what a flex.
I'm like, I'm so confused, but The New Yorker has approved. but I think that I get pretty confused once it goes out there and it's like seen in a certain way. Yeah. And I'm like, what? Wait.
I was looking at the comments on YouTube mm-hmm. for the Water Me Down video.
Oh, Lord. Are they bad?
They're so great.
Yeah, great. Yeah,
okay.
It's like overwhelmingly positive.
Okay, good.
You should read them if you're ever feeling
I'm
down.
I'm so scared. I can't.
We'll print the select,
yeah, right.
Some
yeah,
select right. few out.
I didn't see anything negative.
Exactly.
I was like,
oh, cool.
Yes, it was so encouraging.
Because it goes down in the YouTube comments. People are vicious. But I will say the times where I feel the most sure of what I've made is when I'm performing, because that is the only time that I'm interacting with people who are, they don't even have to say anything to me, but just energetically, they're letting me know we're in this together, and I don't feel like I just have like press and like numbers in my inbox and like, you know, like, but when I'm sitting at home writing, like, that's my thread to what is going on with my record. So it's like, it's very different when I'm on tour and I'm like going to places and seeing people and being like, holy crap, like what? And that's when it feels like, okay, we're all right. Yeah. Yeah.
What does it feel like to, when you're performing live, to look down and have people just like looking at you with love in their eyes?
I don't know. It's pretty embarrassing. I have this thing where if I open my eyes for too long while performing, I will like sing a bad note. Like, like it gets too real. Like it gets so, like, so I have to like look, when my eyes are open, I have to look right past everybody. So, you know, I don't spend much time at the merch table anymore, but that's really where I got to talk to people. And that's where I got to like hang out with people in a way that was like, you know, we're on the same level. Cause I think, I don't know if I'm supposed to be into the whole, like, I'm more elevated than you think, but it kind of freaks me out a little bit.
So my favorite line on the last album from Every Woman is, all the women I meet are tired. Mm. Where did that come from?
It's like loosely referencing a poem by Nayira Wahid. And it's in this book called Nejma that I really enjoyed. And it's just a line that I think like unites a lot of people. It's one that a lot of people can understand. So,
Do you want to play a little bit of
that? Yeah, let's do it.
We'll be back with more from Vagabond after the break. As listeners to this show, you probably consider yourself pretty smart. But how smart is your wallet? When you're looking to upgrade your wallet, it's time to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds has the financial smarts to help you find the right financial products for you. Before NerdWallet, you might have paid for vacations with whatever was in your wallet, but you could have been missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table. Now you can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G-connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How did the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest. Sue Brewer and the birth of outlaw country music. Discover the true, untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer helped shape the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed The Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts, would spur each other on to tap into something bigger, realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Bacharach as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash, alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest. Sue Brewer and the birth of outlaw country music. Listen now at audible.com/theboar'snest. We're back with the rest of our interview with Vagabond.
What part of your music are you enjoying the most so far? Is it the songwriting, between the songwriting, the recording, the performing?
Right now, I'm enjoying, I think performing is number one. Okay. And then recording has become number two. Songwriting is just kicking my ass lately. But if you asked me like last year, I would have said, I enjoy songwriting. but that's, I'm writing now. So I'm, that's like where I'm like emotionally like getting a beating all the time. So
is it hard because you're running out of things to talk about or you can't find ways to express things?
No, it's hard because more people are watching.
So the pressure's on.
Yeah. And I'm trying, and I'm like, I had this thought, I was like, what if I just like got a job somewhere and I didn't think about music all the time?
What are you going to go for?
I don't know. But I was like, what if I just was a coder? Like, and then
this is
just
plan B.
It's like, but it's almost like self-protect. It's like, I want to go back to the time. And again, this is so, I feel like I'm in therapy right now. This is not a real thing. This is me freaking out. Like, this is me like writing an album and freaking out. Like, that's when we're talking. But it's, I want to like not think about music 24/7 to a point where it's like insane, you know?
Need a break.
Yeah. Like, maybe I'll go volunteer somewhere and like do that for like 4 days a week so that something else is occupying my time besides me and my music.
You don't want music to feel like work.
Yeah, I don't want it to feel like it's the only thing that I know how to do and it's the only place that I hold my, like, my, all my eggs, you
right,
know? I want
right,
to, like...
Your worth.
Yeah, your, yeah. Right. That seems a little dangerous. And so I want to, like, I want to... Yeah, I think I'm just going to volunteer somewhere. Like,
yeah, like play with kittens.
Yeah, like right now there are so many things that I could do with my time instead of sitting there and being like, ooh.
Like, I know the feeling.
You know?
Yeah, I think so, we all feel that yeah. way.
It doesn't matter what you're doing.
Right, exactly.
So don't stop making music.
Don't.
That will exist no matter what you're doing.
No, I don't plan to.
What do you feel naturally drawn to like writing about?
Mostly it's sad. And I think that's because of how I've like started writing songs. And like, you know, a lot of people write from that space, a lot of people, but like, I can't write a song about, I haven't been able to write a song about being happy or like so happy I had to write a song. Like, it's usually like so mad or so sad that I have to write a song. And that's just kind of like what my first songs were about, was like, all like grappling all this stuff that was confusing. So I think that that's like currently and up until now has been where I draw the most like emotion from.
I think songs about hardship, suffering, heartbreak might be more interesting than happy songs.
Hot take.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I'm biased, but
yeah, I like both.
You know,
but yeah. I'm always drawn to like super sad songs.
Yeah, I mean, me too.
Yeah,
I have been in the past. Like, those are the songs that I like, and it's weird because I also listen to a lot of pop music that is not devastating, you know. But I think because I've just like, oh, like I had a very sad time like when I was a teenager, that's, you know, when we're talking about like listening to pop punk and
like pop punk, emo
and like all that stuff, like it's not so much that I related to the content of their lyrics, but it was like the emotion. So like, even if it's a happy song, like how it emotes has to kind of be like forceful and
in
angry. Yeah, like, you know. So
is there anybody that you consider to be just a musical genius? Who you're just completely in awe of?
Well, it changes all the time, obviously. But right now, I'm pretty obsessed with Roy Orbison.
Yeah.
Like, fuck.
What is it about him?
I mean, just the drama. It's grand. And it's, like, really incredible vocalist. And the songs are great. And it's just kind of this like type of singing that makes me like, I'm just super interested and impressed, and like, I want to know everything about him these days.
I heard a story about him that when he sang, he barely opened his mouth.
That's classic crooner. I love it. I love it. I'm so jealous.
I don't get what people talk about Elvis. I'm like, Roy Orbison.
Yeah.
Like, such a beautiful, unique voice.
Oh my God. And I like it so... I've been playing that song Crying.
Can you do that?
So good. I wish. Let me not embarrass myself on here. It's so good.
That's a dramatic song.
That's what I'm
saying.
See,
I'm saying the sad drama. Like, that's what makes a good song.
I'm here for it. And that's the thing. It's like, it's sad, but it still makes you feel good.
Yeah.
Is there a song that you're trying to write now that you just can't articulate yet? Like a feeling you're trying to get at or an experience you're trying to work through?
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of them, but that's usually... writing songs have gotten harder for me. I'm definitely thinking more. One thing I'm obsessed with right now is like my songs reading well without the music, because I've been so like obsessed with production and arrangement, and those things are super important. But like some of my favorite, like mostly folk music, but like they just read so beautifully when you just read the lyrics.
And what's an example of a song you're thinking of?
I mean, everything on Joni Mitchell's Blue, like Joanna Newsom's lyric. Have you ever read that like without music?
They're kind of dense, right?
Dense as fuck. Yeah. It is, and it's masterful actually when you read it and you see all the. I mean, I don't know if she was like an English person, but it kind of just reads like a book, and it's impressive. And English being my second language, I just have never really like felt precious about saying something in the most poetic way. Like, and I'm trying to just like see what that world is about. Mm. And Julie Byrne, do y'all know Julie Byrne? She's amazing. She had a record called Not Even Happiness. And there's a song she had that she has on there called I Live Now as a Singer. And it's just like, it's just poetry, but it also is an incredible song. So that's been kind of what I've been going through with my songwriting.
I was wondering if before we got, I know you were going to do like a Joanna Newsom song.
Yeah.
You switched it up, right?
I think I switched it up. I've been kind of obsessing over this song called Reason to Believe by Karen Dalton.
Yeah, Reason. I think it's a Tim Hardin song.
It is.
Right? I love that. That's a great.
It's so good. Courtney Barnett and I just recorded a cover of it like 2 days ago. And so it's like in my head. So
yeah.
Oh, amazing.
I haven't played the Joanna Newsom in a while. So
should we play that
now? Do you game to play it?
Yeah.
Oh, sweet. That was awesome. Thank you.
Yeah,
appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming by.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was really fun.
Thanks to Vagabond for sitting down with me and Leah and playing some music for us. She was all set to head out on the headlining tour across the country, but that's been postponed for the time being. In the meantime, you can hear all of our favorite Vagabond songs by heading to BrokenRecordPodcast.com. Broken Record is produced with help from Jason Gambrell, Mila Bell, Leah Rose, Matt LaBoza, and Martin Gonzalez for Pushkin Industries. Our theme music's by Kenny Beats. I'm Justin Richmond. Thanks for listening.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.